Seekers, Mike Malloy here on a Friday. Yeah, we started playing the goodbye, going straight to hell music. I don't know, it's Friday, right? Welcome to the program. Seven past the hour. I don't know what to make of Mancow Muller. When we were in Chicago a decade ago, he was on one of the competing radio stations, competing with WLS. I thought he was a real jerk, typical Midwestern right-wing freak who made a lot of money, brought in a lot of listeners because of the craziness that he did. And I think he was with the NBC affiliate up there, or maybe not. I have no idea. But Mancow, his real name is Eric Muller. I don't know where the Mancow comes from. But, you know, a typical right-wing radio host who, among other claims to fame, he said that back in 2005 that Howard Dean, who was then the Democratic National Committee chairman, was vile and bloodthirsty and evil and should be kicked out of America. Now, Howard Dean never did anything along the lines of, say, Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Michael Savage or Mancow Muller, right? But it was, you know, this is what right-wingers do. They'll pick somebody who is really a decent human being like Howard Dean and come up with all this lard-ass nonsense when, if they really wanted to suggest somebody get out of the country, obviously they would pick somebody from the right side of the spectrum, political spectrum, right? So anyway, lately, Mancow, I understand, has been belittling the idea of waterboarding, partial drowning, the water torture that the United States now applies or has been applying. You never know anymore, do you, under Bush and Cheney. Meantime, this morning, Elizabeth Cheney was on MSNBC, I think, on Morning Joe with that right-wing freak, talking about, again, you know, she and her pappy are just bound to determine to continue to trivialize a partial drowning. Elizabeth Cheney is making a total fool of herself, which is certainly her right to do, and I hope she stays out there. Keep talking, baby, and your old man. Just keep going, okay? But aside from the clownish nature of what the Cheneys are saying, there is also the ugliness behind it. We are a country who, for a period of time, possibly even now, a period of time during the Bush crime family years, tortured people because we could. Cheney, Bush had no more ability to do this than pee up a rope. Cheney would sit down with his cadre of Nazi-like lawyers. A matter of fact, the comparison is perfect. The Nazis did this too in Germany. They rewrote the laws so that they could claim that what they did was lawful. This is exactly what Cheney and his group of thugs did also. They rewrote the laws so they could claim that torture was legal. Okay? Mancow Muller, who is not the brightest bulb in the marquee, but he makes a lot of money and brings a lot of money into his home station. Mancow Muller has been belittling waterboarding. Oh, it's no big deal. And today on his program, he decided to go ahead and give it a shot this morning. So he lasted 6 seconds. Now, even an older dude, fatter dude, Christopher Hitchens, lasted 14, I think. But Mancow Muller, big, strapping Midwestern boy. Yes, he is. Big, strong guy. 6 seconds. His legs were tied down, his hands were free, his feet were slightly elevated, and somebody from the torture school, I don't know where that guy was from, Torture R Us or the American School of Torture, I don't know, a big muscular dude in a white t-shirt was there with a pitcher of water and all kinds of little cameras around while Mancow's crew, his morning crew, were taking pictures and, are you okay? Are you okay? Because if it weren't for ManCow, none of them would be, you know, would be working. So they laid him back on the board, put a wet cloth over his eyes. The torture demonstrator pinched his nose and they started pouring the water. ManCow lasted 6 seconds. He had in his hand a little cow, and what he was supposed to do once the point where he couldn't take any longer, he would drop the cow. He dropped the cow with his left hand. With his right hand, he reached up and grabbed the hand of the guy pinching his nose, ripped off the rag that was over his eyes, and sat bolt upright. His sycophants and hangers-on immediately said, do you need the EMT guy? They had an EMT guy there. Jesus Christ. Do you need the EMT? No, no, no. ManCow said. And he sat there and he said, this is torture. I don't want to say this. This is torture. That's torture. I'd confess to anything. That's torture. Really? You think? Huh. So, one by one, you know, the right-wingers who are essentially cowards, blowhards, dumbasses, you know, they're all taking the challenge. Well, I can do this. Waterboarding? Oh, bat snot. What's a little water in the face? Now, where's Sean Hannity? You know, I want to see Hannity lay back on the board with his men's warehouse suit and his tie knotted tightly around his neck. Let that cowardly son of a bitch lay back. Get his feet about 6 inches up in the air. Come on, Sean. Come on. You said you were going to do it. And Keith Olbermann said he would pay a dollar a second to any charity connected with veterans for every second you lasted. You overblown, bloated jackass. How long would you last, Sean? 4 seconds? 3? 2? So one by one, I think this is a good idea. Let's do Michael Savage now. Ah, come on, Savage, you cowardly piece of human waste. Let's see you do it. Ah, come on. And, of course, the pig man. Wouldn't that be interesting? As grossly overweight as Limbaugh is, he's probably diabetic. He's a former junkie, and not that former ago. I bet he has high blood pressure, and he probably, the diabetic, high blood pressure, his cholesterol count is probably up around 7,000. Let Limbaugh, can he lay on his back? Let Limbaugh lay on his back. And elevate his ass, his monstrous thighs, and his ankles. Put a wet cloth over the pig man's eyes and nose. Pinch his nostrils shut. And start pouring a pitcher of water. And let's see how long the pig man lasts. What do you say, truth seekers? I say 4 seconds. Now, what I'm hoping is if the pig man would do this, you know what I'm hoping, that in the process of doing this, he would have a massive coronary. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, but that's exactly how I feel. You know, he would be down there going, well, this is nothing. And somebody in the studio would say, Rush, would you like the EMT man? Rush? Rush? Would you like the EMT? Rush! Quick, somebody call an ambulance! Jesus, God! And then can you imagine trying to do CPR on this guy? How do you compress the chest wall of somebody who is that big? Seriously, I don't know how you do it. So one at a time, these big, brave, sarcastic, snotty right-wing talk show hosts are going to try waterboarding. Huh? Come on, boys, follow ManCow Mueller's lead. You can do it. If Eric can do it, you can do it. The Marine sergeant who, I guess it was a Marine sergeant, the guy from Torture R Us who waterboarded him, the Marine sergeant said the average person can take this for 14 seconds. Well, ManCow, you lasted 6. I wonder if that pulls the average down just a tad. He said, I knew if I knew it was going to be this bad, I wouldn't have done it. I mean, that's drowning. It's like drowning. It's such an odd feeling to have water poured down your nose and your head back. It was instantaneous. And I don't want to say this, but absolutely torture. It was like drowning. Oh, my God, it was like drowning. It was like drowning. Really? Imagine that. The words that burn me. Love has never asked you why.
Get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Nancy Pelosi today, I wouldn't call it a press conference, but she issued a statement where she said she ain't backing down. She stands by her contention that the CIA lied to her about torture techniques that were put in place by the Bush crime family. And I think she's pretty much had enough of this kind of attention. I guess it was a news conference. She said, "I've made the statement that I'm going. I've made the last statement that I'm going to make on this. I stand by my comment, and what we're doing is not going to be distracted by this conversation." So she was pressed further, and she said, "I don't have anything more to say about it." Period. So. You know, again, I said from the beginning of this little dust up that I had to be in a position of defending somebody who would not defend the U.S. Constitution, even though she took an oath to do so. She would not defend the American people against the criminal activity, and she had the power to do that, against the criminal activity of the Bush crime family when she was the designated or elected Speaker of the House of Representatives, replacing John Boehner. She had the perfect opportunity to fulfill her obligations under the Constitution, mainly just get the hell out of the way and let the House Judiciary Committee or a subcommittee on that committee begin taking evidence about impeachable offenses. And God knows these two clowns committed more impeachable offenses, I think, than the last 30 presidents combined. So Pelosi, who probably has started to believe and perhaps has visited a karmic center in her home state of California, where they are definitely abundant, but maybe she has come to realize that, God, I hate this expression, what comes around goes around, or what goes around comes around, or something. Like I said, I hate that expression. I just, you know, it's childish. But Pelosi has gotten a very valuable lesson, I think, right? She protected two criminals. She did. She provided cover for them. It may have been passive cover, or depending on your interpretation, maybe it was active cover. But she refused to allow the House Judiciary Committee to begin impeachment inquiry. She refused to order the House Judiciary Committee to begin an impeachment inquiry. She planted herself in the doorway, much like George Wallace did at the University of Alabama, and said no. Abso-goddamn-lutely no. Okay, Nancy, the members of the party whose president you so ardently defended turned on you like the snakes they are. How does it feel? Look down there at your ankle. See all those bite marks? That's right. So Nancy Pelosi, who has really irritated me, and most Democrats, I think it goes without saying, most progressive Democrats, dinos and blue dogs and so on and so forth, they couldn't care less. Matter of fact, they probably celebrated the idea that Nancy didn't put the country through the strain of impeachment inquiry. Oh, my God. How could we handle that? Two words, Bill Clinton. But anyway, when this dust up came with the CIA, it just so happened that Pelosi was absolutely right. And I have to say, reluctantly, just like Mancow Mueller had to say, oh, I hate to say this, but it's torture. I have to say this reluctantly, but I certainly can't appreciate the fact that Nancy Pelosi refused to back down and say, well, maybe, could be, perhaps, I don't know. My recollection is, well, I don't have a recollection of, well, at that point in time, you know, all that Watergate speak that we all got so gagged on all those years ago. Oh, my God. Pelosi didn't do that. And today she kind of put an exclamation point after her statement. I won't have anything more to say about it. So there you go. Well, good for you, Nancy. It's just a damn shame that when you had the opportunity to rescue your country, and I'm not talking about this briefing or non-briefing or whatever the hell it was, I don't for a second believe that the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives can be so far out of the loop in Washington, D.C. that she didn't hear at least rumors of what was going on. Now, she had a right to close her ears and say la, 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 la as much as she wanted to. So rumors, schmoomers, where it concerned the briefing by America's own homegrown terror organization, the CIA. I think Nancy Pelosi was absolutely right. They never told her a damn thing. Probably because she, we're not quite sure if we can trust Nancy. We can trust some of them, but I don't know about Nancy. You know, she's a chick. She's from California, you know, the home of the fruits and nuts. So, I don't know. I'm sure Dick Cheney said, no, I don't want you to tell Pelosi anything. Nancy Pelosi is, has a potential to blow our cover. And, if you will, I just, I'm not interested in having her know. Do you understand me?
But Mr. Cheney.
Do you understand me?
Yes, sir. This side of the ground. Just give the combination.
We can win a million pounds. Don't need temptation. When you let it in, comes the fear. Just
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Late breaking news today. Liberty University's Democratic Students Club received notice that it would no longer be able to associate the university's name with any of its activities. According to a Lynchburg, Virginia paper, the club's leadership was told, quote, we are unable to lend support to a club whose parent organization stands against the moral principles held by the school. Quoting, continuing the quote, the Democratic Party platform is contrary to the mission of Liberty University and to Christian doctrine. You see, the Democratic Party supports abortion. No, it doesn't. It supports a woman's privacy. Federal funding of abortion. No, it doesn't. It supports federal funding of Medicaid. If a woman, in applying her privacy, wants to seek an abortion, never mind. Advocates repeal of the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. The Defense of Marriage Act, you morons, is a piece of bigoted, insane legislation. Promotes the LGBT agenda. Oh God. Promotes socialism. Promotes, gender identity. Yeah, blah, blah. End of quote. Liberty's Vice President of Student Affairs, Mark Heine. H-I-N-E. How do you pronounce it? Mark Heine apparently told the group via email. And then it goes on to say today, University President, Jerry Falwell Jr. Yeah, Falwell had sex. Can you believe that? Jerry Falwell Jr. dialed back on some aspects of the ban. He said the group would be allowed to hold meetings, but the club and its activities won't be formally recognized. You know, they're just a bunch of filthy communists, right? Jr. said, quote, there's absolutely no animosity at all toward any of these kids. They're good Christian kids who sit with me at ball games. I just hope they find a pro-life family organization to affiliate with so they can be endorsed by Liberty again. Oh, my God. You see, Christianity is fascist from the word go. Especially certain branches of Christianity. Oh, I know. Don't send the emails telling me that Jerry Falwell was not a Christian. Of course he was. Of course he was. Come on. The Christian church, in its overarching reality, is fascist. And, well, you tell me. The Christian church believes that the only way into heaven is if you follow their path, accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and personal Savior, and then you're okay. You can live like, for example, Mahatma Gandhi is burning in hell right now, right? Doesn't that make sense? Pick somebody, pick anyone who has lived a righteous life. Mother Teresa is roasting in hell. Well, wait a minute. She was a Catholic. Well, wait a second. Catholic brother. I'm not sure on that one. Pick all the people out of history who were good and decent people who did Jonas Salk. Oh my God. The guy who invented the, a vaccine against polio is roasting in hell. Why? Because he's a Jew or was a Jew. The Christian church, in all its many manifestations, is a fascist organization. Now, if that pisses you off, I'm terribly, terribly sorry. It's your church. It's your religion. It's your doctrine. And by definition, when there is only one way to get to heaven, now what happens if you don't take that one way to go to heaven? Very simply. Very simple. The answer is simply this. Your immortal soul is tortured for all eternity. You see, did you hear that? Your immortal soul is tortured for all eternity unless you do it our way. We're not fascists, Malloy. Oh, okay. So keep going, Falwell University. Keep going. Keep proving the point that religion is for people who are extremely mentally ill. Yeah, that's right. What else we got? See, email here says, what do you think about being a Lego action figure? Sure. Republican senators to Cheney, note, stay away from our campaigns. How about that? Several Republican senators are sending that message after they were asked whether they'd want Dick Cheney to campaign for them in the 2010 election races. What's his name? Keith Olbermann. He referred to Rush Limbaugh as a toxic waste dump. Isn't that what Cheney is at this point? Except to, well, people like Limbaugh. Except to the true believers on the neo-fascist right. Dick Cheney, to Republicans. Especially those seeking re-election. They don't. No. Go away, Dick. Go get on TV with your daughter, but please stay out of my district. Please stay out of my state. The question was posed by the website Politico.com yesterday. Senator Robert Bennett, Republican Utah, said, quote, the most powerful national politician in Utah is Mitt Romney, and he's already come to Utah to campaign for me, and I think I'll leave it at that, end quote. Oh, really? Senator Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, said, quote, I'm not going to go there yet. And then he added that Cheney is, quote, trying to set the record straight on his administration, end quote. But he didn't want to talk. Richard Burr didn't want to talk about, quote, what's going on in my campaign? You know, I don't even have an opponent, end quote. And McCain? John? The former Republican nominee for president, the one that Rush Limbaugh says, Arlen Specter ought to take McCain with him when he leaves the Republican Party. McCain said, I don't have the time or energy to discuss that. Or the inclination. Representative Rob Portman, Republican of Ohio, and Florida Governor Charlie Crist, Republican of Florida, both were disinclined to answer about Cheney. Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, who is she running? Yeah, she's running. She's a senator running for reelection. She said she hadn't thought about whether she'd want to see Cheney in her state. And she also said that Cheney's words, quote, have a tendency to get him into trouble sometimes, end quote. Who else? John Thune, Republican of South Dakota, laughed when Politico asked him if he wanted Cheney to come. Thune laughed and said, in South Dakota? Yeah. Can we talk about something else? Man. Well, I think, you know, like I said, I hope Dick and Elizabeth stay out there. Just stay out there, folks. Keep putting your mugs on morning TV, afternoon TV, Sunday TV, Monday TV. Keep going on Hannity's program and Limburger's program. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Keep stay out there. Stay out there. Now, Elizabeth Cheney told Fox News's Sean Hannity, Sean Hannity, oh my God, that her father decided to speak out after he learned there was a possibility of legal action, you know, against him. This is what she said on Sean's toy television show, quote, "He certainly did not plan when he left office to be doing this, but I think as we watched in those very first days and weeks after President Obama came into office when he released the memos that lay out for the terrorists the techniques we used to question them." Oh, yeah, Elizabeth, that's what it did. Uh-huh. "Then when he suggested in the Oval Office itself that he would be open to the prosecution of former Bush administration officials, including many who weren't political appointees, potentially, you know, really, I think that made my dad realize this was just fundamentally wrong. We had to speak out." Oh, really, Elizabeth? You don't want to have to fill in one of those forms so you can go visit your father at the Supermax prison in Marion, Illinois? No, that's where they put terrorists. That's where they put war criminals. Spandau has been closed, I believe. Is Spandau still open? Elizabeth accused Barack Obama of having a September 10th mentality. What is that? I'm not sure what that is. She said, quote, "I think that when you read the president's speech," she's talking about the speech yesterday, "he has a September 10 mentality. And one of the most moving messages I got today out of the many hundreds that I received was from a family member of a 9/11 victim saying, thank you for reminding the country. Thank you for reminding the White House." And then she added, "You know, this wasn't a mess, as President Obama described it. This was an attack on the homeland." Well, Elizabeth, you keep taking you and your pappy out there and sticking your mugs on TV, okay? Just keep it up.
Inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. McClatchy Newspapers delegated a couple of their reporters, their writers, to take a look at Cheney's speech and find all the lies and omissions and misstatements. Apparently, there were also exaggerations, as the writers of McClatchy Newspapers put out there yesterday in his address to the American Enterprise Institute. Cheney said that the techniques the Bush administration approved, including partial drowning, well, they say waterboarding, forced nakedness and sleep deprivation were legal and produced information that, quote, prevented the deaths of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of innocent people, end quote. Oh, my God. Cheney quoted the director of National Intelligence, Admiral Dennis Blair, as saying that the information gave U.S. officials, quote, a deeper understanding of the al-Qaeda organization that was attacking this country, end quote. However, in a statement April 21st, Admiral Dennis Blair said the information, quote, might have been valuable in some instances, but that, quote, there is no way of knowing whether the information could have been obtained through other means. The bottom line, the admiral said, is that these techniques hurt our image around the world, and the damage they have done to our interests far outweighed whatever benefit they gave us, and they are not essential to our national security, end quote. Ooh, the DNI, the Director of National Intelligence. Ooh, take that, bitch slap, right across your lips, huh, dick? Whap! And a top-secret CIA Inspector General's investigation found no proof that information gained from aggressive interrogations, that would be torture, helped thwart any, quote, specific imminent attacks, end quote, according to one of four top-secret Bush-era memos that the Justice Department released last month. FBI Director Robert Mueller told Vanity Fair magazine in December that he didn't think that the techniques disrupted any attacks. The writers at McClatchy enumerate. Here's one. Cheney said that President Barack Obama's decision to release the four top secret Bush administration memos on the interrogation techniques were, quote, flatly contrary, end quote, to national security and would help al-Qaeda train terrorists in how to resist U.S. interrogations. However, Admiral Blair, who oversees all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, said in his statement that he recommended the release of the memos. He strongly supported Obama's decision to prohibit the use of these methods and, quote, we do not need these techniques to keep America safe, end quote. Another bitch slap. A dick? Cheney said that the Bush administration, quote, moved decisively against the terrorists and their hideouts and their sanctuaries and committed to using every asset to take down their networks, end quote. The former vice president didn't point out that Osama bin Laden, you remember him, Dick, and his chief lieutenant, Ayman al-Zawahiri, remain at large nearly 8 years after 9/11. And that the Bush administration began diverting U.S. forces, intelligence assets, time, money, soldiers, bombs, bullets to an invasion of Iraq before it finished the war in Afghanistan against al-Qaeda and the Taliban. Of course, I think rational people understand that Osama bin Laden is dead, but let's play along. There are now 50,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan fighting to contain the bloodiest surge in Taliban violence since the 2001 U.S.-led intervention. And Islamic extremists have also launched their most concerted attack yet on neighboring nuclear-armed Pakistan. Way to go, Dick. Way to go, you psychopathic bastard. Cheney denied there was any connection between the Bush administration's interrogation policies and the abuse of detainees at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison, which he blamed on a few sadistic guards in violation of American law, military regulations, and simple decency. However, the bipartisan Senate Armed Services Committee report last December traced the abuses of Abu Ghraib to the approval of the techniques by senior Bush administration officials, including Donald Rumsfeld. And who else? Dick. Senators Carl Levin, Democrat, John McCain, Republican, said in the report, quote, the abuse of detainees in U.S. custody cannot simply be attributed to the actions of a few bad apples, so-called, acting on their own. The fact is that senior officials in the United States government solicited information on how to use aggressive techniques, redefined the law to create the appearance of their legality, and authorized their use against detainees, end quote. Now, in regard to that last, when we come back, I'm going to read for you something written by Leila Anwar. It's at her website. arabwomanblues.blogspot.com, and it is titled The Rape of Iraq's Children. I would make this an Uncle Mike story corner, but it's a little too grim for even that segment of our program. And I need to tell you in advance, as I do when I have stories like this, that you may want to consider who is listening when I begin to read this, when we come back after the break. So you are warned. This comes because Sheila wrote, I have a problem with releasing the hundreds of photos of Iraqis being tortured. These photos, according to those who know, are of children and women being raped. Many Americans, including me, aren't capable of handling such ghastly horror. No mother or father, for that matter, would ever be the same person after seeing those photos. I do think they should be the first items released to a special prosecutor, however. When we come back, a blog from Leila Anwar. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour, almost. This is the Malloy program. All right. I got an email today from one of our regular correspondents, Sheila, who, among other things, said, I do have a problem with releasing the hundreds of photos of Iraqis being tortured. In other words, Sheila feels that Obama made the right decision in ordering them not to be released, even though the ACLU's lawsuit had ruled the other way. Sheila wrote, these photos, according to those who know, people who have seen them, are of children and women being raped. And many Americans, myself included, aren't capable of handling such horror. No mother or father, for that matter, would ever be the same after seeing these photos. I do think they should be the first items released to a special prosecutor, however. And then Sheila included for me a link to Leila Anwar's blog site. And Sheila said, by the way, see here, and that's the hyperlink, for Leila Anwar's raw truth on the matter. If you're just joining us, this next little reading comes with an advisory. It is fairly graphic. So you may not want to have kids listening to it. I don't know why any child I'm talking about, you know, little kids, would be listening to this program anyway. All you hear is cussing and yelling. But here it is from Leila Anwar, whose blog spot is Arab Woman Blues. I received a mail the other day. Now, let me pause a second. Obviously, English is not her first language, although she is very well-spoken in English. So if you hear grammatical errors, I'm reading directly from her website. I received a mail the other day from someone who I assume to be some Westerner, most likely an American. In it, he said that he enjoyed reading my posts. However, He requests me to stop using the word F, you know, as it was offensive and that children may be reading it. First of all, children are not supposed to be reading political blogs on the net and should be watching cartoons instead. Secondly, I want to remind this reader and others that if they get offended by the F word, then they really have a huge moral problem on their hands, because the American, British, and Iranian occupation of Iraq has literally effed Iraqi children. Oh, no. Oh, yes. It does not take a luminary in the social sciences to realize that there is a humanitarian social catastrophe taking place in Iraq and for generations to come. I do not wish to go through all the aspects here, but suffice to tell you that when you occupy and destroy a whole country, its first victims are children and women. Millions, 5 million to be precise, and that is the official figure, millions of orphaned kids. You know what millions are, don't you? Surely, if you are a nation obsessed with dollars and making millions, you must know how to count millions, no? And what about thousands? Surely you can count those too. Thousands of refugee children with no future. Thousands of maimed children. Thousands with no more access to education and health care. Thousands of cases of malnutrition, poverty, illness. Thousands deeply traumatized for life. Okay, so what about hundreds of dollars? You can count hundreds of green bills. Hundreds trafficked, sold, bought, turned into sex slaves, hundreds jailed and tortured, and the list goes on and on and on. But that is not all, ladies and gentlemen. That is not all. That is not all, because your so-called civilized West and its so-called civilized democratic system, with its so-called civilized state of law and its so-called civilized civilizing mission and its so-called civilized culture, has literally effed Iraqi children, sodomized and raped them, to be more accurate. You set precedents, and the sectarian Shiite militias did exactly the same when they kidnapped and tortured Iraqi children, because they were Arab Sunnis for the most part. Too bad YouTube removed the testimony of one Iraqi doctor who saw kids brought in by armed Shiite militiamen for, quote, treatment. The YouTube video no longer exists. So when your Democratic Obama agreed not to release more pictures from Abu Ghraib because there was more committed in Abu Ghraib, much more, most websites reran old pictures with the caption, "This is what the current administration does not want you to see." Bull blank and more bull blank from so-called alternative websites. What your current complicit government does not want you to see is the torture and rape of Iraqi children and women in Abu Ghraib. That is why they don't want you to see. Supposedly, under the pretext that it will inflame further anti-American sentiments. So you already know that there are burning anti-American sentiments, huh? Who would have guessed, you sons of bitches? Who would have guessed? A, quote, cool, end quote, article finally came out from the alternative media. It says, the real reason behind Obama's reversal of a decision to release the torture photos has been almost completely ignored by the corporate media. The fact that the photos show both U.S. and Iraqi soldiers raping teenage boys in front of their mothers, end quote. And here are the testimonies from some ex-detainees, quote. But then she quotes Cy Hirsch. Some of the worst things that happened you don't know about, okay, said Hirsch. Videos. There are women there. Some of you may have read that they were passing letters out, communications out to their men. This is at Abu Ghraib. The women were passing messages out saying, please come and kill me because of what's happened. And basically what happened is that these women who were arrested with young boys, children in cases that have been recorded, the boys were sodomized with the cameras rolling. And the worst, above all of that, is the soundtrack of the boys shrieking that your government has. They are in total terror. It's going to come out. And, quote, I saw, name blacked out, effing a kid. His age would be about 15 years. The kid was hurting very badly, and they covered all the doors with sheets. Then when I heard the screaming, I climbed the door because on top it wasn't covered. And I saw blank, who was wearing a military uniform, putting his blank in the little kid's blank. Mr. Hilas told the military investigators, quote, I couldn't see the face of the kid because his face wasn't in front of the door and the female soldier was taking pictures, end quote. And this, quote, they came with two boys naked and they were cuffed together face to face, and Grainer, that would be Corporal Charles Grainer, was beating them, and a group of guards were watching and taking pictures from top and bottom, and there were three female soldiers laughing at the prisoners, end quote. And this, quote, a 2004 London Telegraph report also described photos which showed U.S. soldiers beating an Iraqi prisoner nearly to death and having sex with a female POW, as well as a videotape apparently made by U.S. personnel which shows, quote, Iraqi guards raping young boys, end quote. When I wrote about all this nearly 2 years ago, Layla goes on, including the brutal, sadistic rape of women in Abu Ghraib, I received males calling me a perverted liar. No, you MFers, you are the sick perverts and the liars steeped in pathological deceit. A sick nation made of sick, effed-up people parading under the guise of civilized democracy and freedom. Who will pick up the pieces, you garbage of a people? Who? Your brave boys and girls? Your leeches? Your politically corrupt UN, your Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch, your morally bankrupt EU, your Democrat Obama of the anti-war blanks around, or maybe your anti-Zionist Iran and its Shiite militias and its Nouri al-Maliki and Muqtada al-Sadr, or maybe your alternative media with its sham writers. Who the F will pick up whatever pieces are left, the pieces of a raped childhood in Iraq? Who?
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Cheney said that only detainees of the highest intelligence value were subjected to the harsh interrogation techniques. And he cited Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, in his speech yesterday, continuing with the McClatchy newspaper's article. He didn't mention Abu Zubaydah, the first senior al-Qaeda operative to be captured after 9/11. Former FBI Special Agent Ali Soufan told a Senate subcommittee this last week that his interrogation of Zubaydah using traditional methods elicited crucial information, including Mohammed's alleged role in 9/11. Soufan said the decision to use the harsh interrogation methods, the torture, quote, was one of the worst and most harmful decisions made in our efforts against al-Qaeda, end quote. Former State Department official Philip Zelikow, who in 2005 was then Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice's point man, in an internal fight to overhaul the Bush administration's detention policies, joined Soufan in his criticism. What we are doing here is going through the lies, distortions, and obfuscations in Dick Cheney's speech yesterday. Cheney said that, quote, the key to any strategy is accurate intelligence, end quote. But the Bush Department, the Bush administration ignored warnings from experts in the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the State Department, the Department of Energy, and other agencies, and used false or exaggerated intelligence supplied by Iraqi exile groups and others to make its case for the 2003 invasion. Cheney made no mention in his speech of al-Qaeda operative Ali Mohammed al-Afakhari, who's known as Ibn Sheikh al-Libi, whom the Bush administration secretly turned over to Egypt for interrogation in January 2002. While allegedly being tortured by Egyptian authorities, al-Libi provided false information about Iraq's links with al-Qaeda, which the Bush administration used despite doubts expressed by the Defense Intelligence Agency. And as you know, a state-run Libyan newspaper said Libi committed suicide a week or so ago in a Libyan jail. Cheney accused Obama of the selective release of documents on Bush administration detainee policies, charging that Obama withheld records that Cheney claimed prove that information gained from the harsh interrogation methods prevented terrorist attacks. Cheney said, quote, "I formally ask that the information be declassified so the American people can see the intelligence we obtained. Last week, that request was formally rejected," end quote. However, the decision to withhold the documents was announced by the CIA, which said that it was obliged to do so by a 2003 executive order issued by George W. Bush, prohibiting the release of materials that are subject of lawsuits. Cheney said that only, quote, "ruthless enemies of this country," end quote, were detained by U.S. operatives overseas and taken to secret U.S. prisons. However, a 2008 McClatchy investigation found that the vast majority of Guantanamo detainees captured in 2001 and 2002 in Afghanistan and Pakistan were innocent citizens of little intelligence value who were turned over to American officials for money or because of personal or political rivalries in Afghanistan. In addition, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said on October 5, 2005, that the Bush administration had admitted to her that it had mistakenly abducted a German citizen, Khalid Masri, from Macedonia in January 2004. Masri reportedly was flown to a secret prison in Afghanistan where he allegedly was abused while being interrogated. That means he was tortured. He was released in May 2004 and dumped on a remote road in Albania. In January 2007, the German government issued arrest warrants for 13 CIA operatives on charges of kidnapping Masri. Cheney slammed Obama's decision to close Guantanamo Bay prison camps and criticized his efforts to persuade other countries to accept some of the detainees. The effort to shut down the facility, however, began during Bush's second term, promoted by Condoleezza Rice and Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. Rice said in a December 12, 2000 interview with the BBC, quote, "One of the things that would help us a lot is in the discussions that we have with the states of which they, the detainees, are nationals, if we could get some of those countries to take them back. So we need help in closing Guantanamo." Cheney said that in assessing the security environment after 9/11, the Bush team had to take into account, quote, "dictators like Saddam Hussein with known ties to Mideast terrorists," end quote. Cheney didn't explicitly repeat the contention he made repeatedly in office that Saddam cooperated with al-Qaeda, a linkage that U.S. intelligence officials and numerous official inquiries have rebutted repeatedly. It just goes on and on. Dick Cheney is a liar. He is a war criminal. He needs to be arrested, indicted, tried, convicted, and punished.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, you know, I really do hesitate sometimes to share over the public airwaves or the internet or Sirius XM satellite facilities some of these stories that come out of Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Iraq. I have one in front of me from the LA Times of about 4 days ago that is simply horrifying. It was in a newspaper. And I guess the people who read the LA Times would know what the story's about, but other than that, no. There's there was a discussion someplace, I'm not sure where, and it was online, and I paid attention to it for a while, about the prurient interest that people have in images of war, that there is something about the pictures that or the videotapes that are as attention-getting as pornography. And I guess in a sense they share similarities. Eroticism is one thing. Pornography is something else again. And as famously said by a U.S. Supreme Court justice regarding pornography, I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. I do hesitate to do these horrific stories about dead and burned and blown to pieces children, because it is borderline pornographic, isn't it? And then I think, well, how else are we to know? You and I are so removed from the destruction that George W. Bush and now Barack Obama is bringing to innocent people in three countries. We are so removed from it that it's meaningless. We don't pay any attention to it. We don't dare. If you open your daily paper, and I doubt your local paper carries the stories, the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Post, some of these national so-called newspapers do carry the stories. But if you open a local paper, I'm thinking about the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, that never, ever, 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 under any circumstances, shows graphic images of the children we are blowing to pieces. Or even the adults. Never. I was thinking today, Monday's Memorial Day. Who are we memorializing? Well, obviously, our war dead. And but what about the people that we, literally millions that we have burned to death, butchered in the past 40 years, starting back in 68, 69. We can go back further than that if you want to, but, you know, it becomes overwhelming. You know, what about the memorials for people like that? When I think about the 56,000 names of U.S. war dead on the wall in D.C. from Vietnam, and I think to myself, not one of those mostly young men had to die. Not one. Not a single one. Vietnam did not attack us. Vietnam did not put in jeopardy our interests in Southeast Asia. In fact, Ho Chi Minh had asked Franklin Roosevelt, I believe, or was it Harry Truman, to please, please assist in establishing the independence for once and for all of Vietnam. After fighting against the Japanese and then fighting against the French, what Ho Chi Minh wanted was just his country to be recognized as what it was. And the answer, of course, came from Dwight Eisenhower, who sent military advisors to Vietnam. And it's, you know, it's a long story, but what the hell. But all those names, all those 56,000 names on the wall in Vietnam, in Washington, D.C., from the Vietnamese War, not a single one of those people, those Americans, had to die. Not a single one of 2.5 or 3 million Vietnamese civilians had to die as a result of what we did there. Free fire zones. What a term, huh? Free fire zone. Anything that moved was subject to be murdered. And now we have Iraq that we've had since 2003. We are in our seventh year of this go-around. After, do any of you remember the Highway of Death? Do you remember what that was? When the U.S. military drove the Iraqi troops out of Kuwait, and the Iraqis were fleeing literally for their lives because of the overwhelming superior force put together by General Schwarzkopf. What do we have there? 500,000 soldiers there? Wasn't it close to 500,000? 400,000? Based in Kuwait and Saudi Arabia. And they were fleeing for their lives. And the order came down, and I think it might have been, if I'm wrong, somebody will correct me. I think it came from Petraeus, who at the time did not have all four of his stars. I don't know, maybe it wasn't Petraeus, but somebody made the order, kill them. Just kill them. Do you remember those images from 92 and 93? Do you remember? You remember the pictures? Miles and miles and miles of charred vehicles and charred corpses. Pictures that, if there were such a thing as hell, that would be it. Highway of Death, they called it. As these miserable Iraqis, and by miserable, I mean, you know, they had had an eight-year-long a war with Iran because of the insanity of their leader and the Iranian leaders. So many millions of Iraqis have been butchered and murdered and killed and blown to pieces. And then ordered by Saddam Hussein to do this. And it was funny, wasn't it? I don't know if you remember the images from 92 where Iraqi soldiers would surrender to anyone who approached them if they looked like Americans, if they looked like white-skinned or African-American. You know, they could tell, European-American, African-American, the Iraqis would immediately throw down their weapon, raise their hands, and beg to be taken as a prisoner. Remember that? And I occasionally hear people on the radio talk about that, or on television, but I don't hear them talk about the Highway of Death, about how we, the estimates were, we butchered close to 200,000 fleeing Iraqis who were not fighting. I mean, they realized the force they were up against. They were trying to make it back to Baghdad to do what? Hide? I don't know. But we burned them. We slaughtered them. Well, I know you make an argument, war is hell, and, you know, what do you expect, and so on and so forth. I don't know. I just expect, or I did expect, I don't any longer expect the United States to be better than that. We're not better than that. We're not better than that at all. We are. Our leadership over the past 35 years has been filthy, just filthy. I can't think of an American president over the past 35 years who's not a war criminal by the definitions we laid down at Nuremberg. Maybe 40 years, 50 years. It's easy to mock and feel disgust at this pig, Dick Cheney. But what is so different from Dick Cheney and Lyndon Johnson? I mean, really? I don't know. There must be a difference, right? One's a Republican, one's a Democrat, right? Barack Obama, I just got this email. Mike, Barack Obama says he's protecting us from the anger of the photos and videos photos and videos would generate. Then he goes and orders a strike that kills another 100 women and children. While the surviving family and friends mourn the loss of loved ones, someone reminds them of what you just read. Good work, Mr. President. I never know. I get these articles or blogs or eyewitness reports, stuff that you are not going to see on the evening news for obvious reasons. Most of the evening news comes via corporations that are in the weapons business, the murder business, the killing business. They're certainly not going to show pictures from what passes for a hospital in Afghanistan loaded with screaming, burned children. Children who can't find any way to move their bodies on the beds without causing them excruciating pain. Children whose eyes have been burned out of their heads. Children who are just screaming in anguish because of airstrikes by us. Next year in this world in Washington. There's a world in
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Irish Dave writes in, it was Barry McCaffrey, the general who ran the Highway of Death. He was punished by being appointed Bill Clinton's drug czar. That was his, quote, punishment, end quote. By the way, Irish Dave writes, I think Timothy McVeigh served under McCaffrey. I think you're right. I think you're right. So Barry McCaffrey, every time you see him on television with that odd way he has of talking, and he has used, isn't he a CNN paid consultant or is it NBC? I'm not sure who it is, and I really don't give a damn. But the next time you see him, try to look past his corporate appearance now and see someone who would order the slaughter of people fleeing. Oh, sure, there were soldiers. Yeah, they were soldiers who were running for their lives, and McCaffrey ordered them to be burned alive. Just kill them. Kill them all. Bridget writes, after listening to your reading of the blog post from the Iraqi woman, my first thought was, how can this country ever move forward carrying this kind of karma? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if it's possible, but I do know that Germany has managed to move forward and prosper after the Holocaust by going through a national cleansing and acceptance of culpability. This country needs a similar process. I suggest that Obama authorize the release of the pictures, videos, whatever we have not seen to the general public, at least not at first, but wait a minute. I suggest that Obama authorize the release of the pictures, videos, whatever we have, not to the general public, at least not at first, but to the full Congress, members of the past administration, current cabinet members, and all major news media representatives. I suggest that these people all be brought together in a closed session of Congress and made to watch every single photograph and video, listen to every audio that exists of what was done by them with their authorization or in their name. No cameras, no recorders, just the people who keep spouting about the sanitized rationales and who worry about what Nancy Pelosi did, or what did Nancy Pelosi know and when did she know it, being forced to see and hear the realities. I suspect you might have to pry their eyes open with toothpicks and lock their heads in position to watch. And then again, perhaps there are those who would get off on the spectacle. Either way, I'm so tired of the rhetoric from people on both sides of the aisle who don't have a clue
about the real horrors they're talking about. Oh, and I also suggest there be a full cadre of janitors available to clean up afterwards. I have no idea how to respond to the Iraqi woman's pain. I can't begin to fathom it. I just know that I want those who are in a position to do something about stopping it to feel it too, Bridget. Well, we even have debates, Kathy and I do, here on this program about whether or not certain reports, eyewitness or news reports or whatever, that are extremely graphic in their depiction of the blowing up of children and women and old men and young men. Who have only the misfortune of living in mountainous Afghanistan or the tribal areas, I believe they're called, of Pakistan, or anywhere in Iraq. That's that's what they're guilty of being alive there. And every time a report comes through that requires some sort of response from the U.S. government or the U.S. military, I listen to those responses and I think about this. Piercing wails rose into the antiseptic scented air where four blistered and bandaged little girls lay in side-by-side hospital beds. One of them, 5-year-old Farishta, writhed and cried almost continuously, unable to find a position that did not cause her pain from the burns that covered her arms, legs, and torso. On the night of May 4th, the girls' families, frightened by hours of fierce fighting between insurgents and Afghan and Western troops in and around Ghorani, Afghanistan, had sought shelter together with dozens of neighbors in a pair of sprawling compounds belonging to the village's most powerful tribal clans. After the clashes subsided in the early evening, residents say, many were bedded down by about 8:30, still huddled together in hope of safety. That, they say, is when the bombs fell. 9-year-old Nazbibi, whose large brown eyes were half hidden by swollen eyelids, with eyelashes burned away, remembered falling asleep with her mother and 10-year-old sister by her side. She said, I heard a big boom, and I was buried except for my head. Everything collapsed. The roof was on me, and there were flames. I was so frightened. Her sister, Gulbuddin, was killed. Her mother, Sanam, suffered burns but survived, although the night's events so unhinged her that she apparently suffered a mental collapse. And it goes on. Goes on and on and on. And we're doing this. And again, I ask on this program sometimes, I beg for an answer. What is our objective in Afghanistan? What are we doing there? What was our objective in Iraq, really? But Afghanistan, why are we doing this? Why is Barack Obama increasing U.S. troops, guaranteeing more murder, more slaughter, more killing of innocent children? Barack Obama has 2 little girls. God damn it. The people being burned alive in Afghanistan are like Barack Obama's daughters. Doesn't he understand that? I mean, doesn't he understand that?
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. So, I think Memorial Day in this country is, for most people, and I say most advisedly, I don't know how many people have a direct connection to veterans. My family, up until a couple of years ago, did. I had a brother-in-law. My sister has since died, so I guess he's not my brother-in-law anymore, who was a Vietnam vet, 2 tours in the Navy. And, you know, prior to that, I've mentioned before, I had uncles who served in combat in Europe during World War II. One uncle who was a conscientious objector who wound up working in field hospitals. But as it stands right now, this moment today, no, I don't have a family member, nor does Kathy, who is a veteran of any of our wars. And I think, I'm guessing here, but I think most of the people in this country have the same situation. I think all of us are real aware of war, or we were, weren't we, up until Vietnam. Subsequent to Vietnam, war kind of disappeared off of off television. And if it's not on television, it's not real. Right? Huh? People who aren't on television aren't real. Just like what you're listening to right now. This is not a real person talking. I should know, I used to work in television. But anyway. So on Memorial Day, what are we doing on Memorial Day? Well, it's, you know, a lot of places, people aren't working. They take the day off as we are. And I think on Monday, Memorial Day, what we'll probably do is go to the park with Molly and, you know, maybe take a picnic or something. Is that pretty much what? Yeah, nothing.
It's supposed to pour rain.
Oh, is it? We'll take umbrellas then. Or we'll have a picnic on the back porch and play with the fairywoodland.com fairy houses that that we've collected here. We had, Molly had 4 of her little 4.5-year-old schoolmates over today. Whew. Because the preschool for her, her class ended on Thursday. And, so next year, Molly will be a kindergartner. But so there are 5 little girls here today. They showed up. The 4 little friends showed up at 9:30 this morning. And at 9:30 in the morning, you know, I haven't shaved yet. I haven't used the John. I haven't showered. I haven't had a cup of coffee. In other words, I'm subhuman at that time of the day. I smell bad. You know, I look bad. I'm grouchy. You know, I want silence, and you don't have silence ever when you have a 4.5-year-old in your house. So at 9:30 in the morning downstairs, I hear, you know, the doorbell, and then thumpity thumpity, here they come. Oh, Jesus. And I remember that Kathy had told me Molly's having 4 little friends over. So, you know, what do you do? I pulled the pillow over my head and tried to get down under the blankets, even deeper than I was, but I'm sorry, children are piercing, man. They are too piercing. There is no way that you can get away from the shrieks and screams and hollers and thudding up and down the steps. So, and they had the stairs, you know, from the entranceway up to Molly's room, down to the back porch to see the fairy house that these little girls hadn't seen, the big one that John built and sent to Molly as a Christmas gift. And then up to the attic. Jesus, children like to go up to attics. But the attic, you see, is right over our bedroom, Kathy, my bedroom. So I'm, you know, laying in there and thud, thud, you know, I'm waiting for light fixtures to fall.
And then down in the backyard, and they've got balls down there. We threw a bunch of balls out in the backyard, and they're playing with that. And they go into Molly's little playhouse and then back into the house. And Kathy had a thing where she made cookie dough the night before. So all the and then set out these little dishes on the dining room table. One dish had M&Ms in it. Another dish had chocolate chips in it. Another one had ground up nuts in it. Another one had raisins. And then you get out the cookie dough and you tell all the little girls, okay, we're going to, you're going to make your own cookies. And they did, you know, they roll out the cookie dough and then mash in all this stuff, you know, candy and nuts. And you know, the little girls are just loving the hell out of it, you know. And then they made bird feeders where you take, you know, you go out in the woods and gather in a bunch of pine cones and then smear them with some kind of cooking grease and then roll them in bird seed. And when you have five little under five-year-olds doing that, oh, my God, what a mess. But anyway, the birds will be happy. So they did that. And they're playing. They're having a great time, you know. And I am just so aware that that kind of energy in the house, it just – you know, you absorb it through your skin. It's not you hear it or see it or try to hide from under the pillow. It just permeates, just, you know, right into you. And if you're me, which you're not, I'm me, you know, it makes me at once feel very old, but also very fortunate to have a house full of little girls running, screaming around like little banshees. I don't know what I started to say, Kathy. I have no idea. But it's moments like that where, you know, I'm lying in bed, and usually I'm up earlier. I don't mean to sound like I'm a lie abed because, you know, while Kathy's getting ready to take Molly to preschool, I make breakfast, or we reverse it. While Kathy's making breakfast, I'm getting ready to take Molly to preschool. And, you know, she has to be – we have to leave the house out here in the country about – 8:15 in the morning. That means getting up at 7. And, you know, that's after we go to bed at 1:30 in the morning. And this, so, you know, most parents dread vacation when the kids are out of school. We love it, you know, because it means we don't have to get up. But lying in bed listening to this, especially this morning, listening to all these little girls and all this incredible, yin energy just flooding the house. I mean, you can't get away from it. Little boys, well, it's different. I've had little boys in the house, but little girl energy is just, I don't know. It reverberates and bounces and it's unstoppable. It is just all over the place, right? And it's moments like that, you know, when I start thinking about this job, you know, what Kathy and I do here every night and how unpleasant it really is. You know, it really is. You know, my doctor who keeps an eye on me occasionally, he asked me, he said, "Do you like what you're doing?" That's while I had a stethoscope on my chest. "Do you like what you're doing?" I said, "Well, you know, like is not, I don't think like would be the word. I don't think anyone would like this. It's something I've done for a quarter of a century. I feel like, you know, if I weren't doing it, it'd be almost like, you know, missing something that's essential to me." He said, "Well, you know, I just wondered because, you know, you get pretty hyper about it, don't you?" I said, "Yeah. Yeah, I get pretty hyper about it." I remember one time, who's the comedian, Mark, who substitutes for me once in a while? Huh? Mark Maron, yeah. We were off on vacation, and Mark was substituting, and I listened to him one night. We listened to him online. He was filling in for me. And he sat down behind the microphone. This is, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years ago. And he started talking. And it was just stream of consciousness stuff. And I think that just happened to me. We'll be back after the break with Real Talk Radio. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Four little girls get bigger every day. Thank heaven. Four little girls.
They grow up in the most delightful way. Those little eyes, so helpless and appealing, one day will flash and send you crashing through the ceiling. Thank heaven for little girls. Thank heaven for them all, no matter where, no matter who. Without them, what would little boys do? Thank heaven, thank heaven, thank heaven for little.
Just say die, now that would be pessimistic. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The phone lines are open, 877-996-2556. Roz writes, what really pisses me off, Mike, is that many people don't seem to have any interest in what their government is doing in their names. Yet the mere thought of a few hundred so-called terrorists being brought to the U.S. for imprisonment has them cringing in fear. They are nothing but craven cowards. These are the people that should be forced to see what is being done to little children and the helpless. This is probably how the ancient Roman citizens were when sitting in the Colosseum watching human bodies being ripped apart. The modern-day equivalent of bread and circuses now is probably McDonald's and American Idol. Ooh, Roz. John is calling from Salina, Kansas. Hey, John.
Yeah, hey, how's it going? Listen, I was heard you say that they don't know why these we haven't been attacked since 9/11. We haven't been attacked because David Rockefeller and Evelyn Day Rothschild hasn't decided to attack us yet again.
Wait a minute.
You know, they say they worry about these terrorists. You know, this is all smoke and mirrors and theatrics, you know, to keep America's mind off the fact that they're going to put those Vera chips in our skin and create this one world order that that George Bush talked about.
Okay, hold on just a second. You're a little bit too crazy for me tonight. I mean, I can't. Where did that guy come from, Candy? Oh, my God. Calm down, mister. The what chips under our skin? Brrr, already have mine. You didn't get yours in Salinas, Kansas? How do you say that? No, don't send me an email. You didn't get your chip yet? Well, you better hurry up. You're supposed to report to your nearest drugstore tomorrow at 3:30 in the afternoon to be chipped. I'm sorry, am I making fun of him? Yeah! Nora is calling from Minneapolis. Say, Nora.
Hey there, Mike. I'm calling to defend Barack Obama's work in Afghanistan.
Oh, you are?
Yes, and I'm calling to say this, and I tell everybody that mentions it. You can imagine I'm a big mouth around here, too.
Uh-huh.
But this is it. He's unfortunately inherited a terrible disaster of security conditions in Afghanistan, and you know, like you said, it's from the last 40, 50 years, et cetera, especially 30 years for them. But I get the messages from them. They're determined to work with the local communities to make sure that every kid gets to go to school and every town has clean water. But it first requires extreme concentration of security needs.
No, wait. Extreme concentration of security needs.
Like having a lot of forces.
Wait. Supreme concentration of security needs. Does that mean blowing up children?
Fulfilling the needs, I mean.
Does that mean blowing up children?
I think there's some No, I don't believe in blowing up children.
But that's what we're doing. That's
and
what...
I believe that he, if he would have chosen how to start out in
Nora,
Afghanistan,
Nora,
he's
Nora, he's not being run by Martians who have probes in his head. All Barack Obama needs to do is remove the troops from Afghanistan, not increase them. What is your interest in Afghanistan, if I might ask?
My interest?
Yeah, why do you care whether or not things are this way or that way or the other way in Afghanistan? How does that impact your life, Nora?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're saying about my life, but
well,
my
you
life
you
is
said well
to...
well the reason I'm asking you is because you told me you were calling in to defend Barack Obama's behavior in Afghanistan. If you are defending Barack Obama's behavior in Afghanistan, you must have some sort of interest in that behavior.
Well,
and no, wait, hold on, Nora, don't interrupt me. That's very impolite, and it makes me want to just hang up on you. Since you are defending Barack Obama's interest, it must mean, since he's your president, that you have an interest in what goes on in Afghanistan. What is your interest in Afghanistan?
My interest is, I liked how it was originally when I first heard about it.
Okay, all right. I'm going to say goodbye, Nora, because you're really, really making me angry. So go away, okay? Please go away, especially with your comment about, clean schools and fresh roads or whatever the hell you said, but first there has to be a concentration of security, which translates into first you have to participate in the murder of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. Nora, you're sick. Get well if you can. We'll be back after the break.
Renegade Talk Radio done right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Grant is calling from Portland, Oregon, listening online. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Mike. You made me think about something earlier.
Oh, yeah?
We talked about, with the little girl sleeping in the tribal stronghold, within earshot probably of the battle. And the thing that I was kind of wondering about that, I'm guessing here, it's like, well, did somebody in some back room in Virginia guessed that the stronghold was where the insurgents would go? Furthermore, I mean, we've put how many billions over the last trillions, I guess, if you really think about it, over the last 50 years into satellite imaging, infrared imaging, pattern detection, I mean, just on and on and on. They can watch crickets crawl between rocks in the night on the other side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
What I can't figure out is why we're still wasting wedding parties. How they can't distinguish between a group of civilians and somebody with and without a weapon. I don't get it.
Yeah. I can use Google and find somebody's house and get a crystal clear image of their front porch taken from what appears to be 50 feet away. So, this hooks into the 9/11 2001 question for me, how 19 people
from 15 from Saudi Arabia could defeat the most sophisticated and powerful military and security system in the history of the human race by buying airplane tickets and carrying box cutters.
Well, now you're twirling my tin hat there.
Well, that, but it's the same thing. I mean, you raised the same question. The story we're supposed to believe is that what happened on 9/11 happened the way it's been presented to us. What we're supposed to believe is that it's just an accident. And you know what I read the other day? For the people that were blowing away in Afghanistan, Afghan government sees, and I'm sure this money comes from us, sees that each dead family member is worth $2,000. So now that's apparently just a veritable fortune in Afghanistan. But now we know what a dead four-year-old little girl is worth in Afghanistan. It's worth $2,000. That's what it costs. Now, if we could just key in Republicans on this, maybe they would want to stop the war because, you know, that's unnecessary money being spent for dead children. Or something.
Yeah. I don't think that's really on their scope.
Probably not. But I hear you loud and clear about why we cannot distinguish.
I mean, my dad was in the military, and, you know, years and years and years after stuff gets declassified, he says, hey, you know, they back in the 60s, they could see a pack of smokes from space and read the lettering.
Yeah.
You know, they and now they've got things with infrared imaging. They can tell what kind of animal it is. I mean, I'm shocked, amazed, and surprised that somebody can't distinguish a friggin' wedding party from an insurgent gathering, or they can't tell that, oh, you know, there's a certain amount of metal over here and heat and trace chemicals over here, and little girl sleeping. That's a different signature.
Yeah.
You know, this is not exactly classified stuff anymore. So I just don't understand with all this apparatus why we can't use it.
I don't either. Thanks, Grant. I appreciate you checking in. Maybe because the people who fire the missiles from the drones, and those missiles are fired from 10,000 miles away out here somewhere in the United States. I said Fort Hood one night, and some jerk got all over me about, that ain't Fort Hood, goddammit! You know, I really don't care where it's from. The fact that it's being done by us to them is irrational and sinful. It is, and evil. But the buttons are pushed by whom? I mean, who makes that decision? Is it a non-commissioned officer? Is it a lieutenant? Is it some junior rank officer who looks at a screen and decides based on what may or may not be accurate intelligence regarding coordinates where a Taliban leader or an Al-Qaeda operative is going to bed down for the night? Where does the information come from? Does it come from satellite phones somewhere in the middle of Afghanistan where someone who might have been a Taliban leader slips into a walled compound of houses where there are 15, 20 families and 30 or 40 children? And I mean, who makes the decision? Who decides? Have we gotten that sophisticated in our identification? I mean, do they key in on a cell phone conversation or some sort of transmission on a frequency that we've determined is only used by a certain Taliban leader? So when that leader goes into a house to spend the night, then we know for sure that we are going to kill him if we launch missiles, several, maybe eight or nine, to make sure he is killed, into that house. Does anyone, before they hit the button, stop and question whether or not, not whether or not, but how many children might be sleeping next door or in a room down the hall, such as the halls might be constructed in that sort of a compound? Does anybody do that? Or does some 25-year-old or 22-year-old a soldier who is brought up on video games, does he
listen to his superior, which might be a non-commissioned officer or a junior grade officer, or maybe it's some CIA thug whispering into his ear from 10,000 miles away who says, now, pull it now, and the kid fires. Does the kid who fires these missiles, how does he feel about murdering scores of children? How do you do that? You don't do that after 8 weeks or 10 weeks in basic training. How do you do that? How do you convince yourself that when you fire the Hellfire missile and then the next day you read in the paper that 65 children were burned alive because of a Hellfire missile that was fired at 7:14 local time, p.m., and you remember your shift and you think, well, goddamn, that was my missile. How do you do that? How does any living human do that? You know, there have been a couple times in Molly's young life where I've had to spank her bottom, a quick whap on her butt because of really outrageous behavior. Those of you who spank your children occasionally, you know what I'm talking about. Immediately afterwards, I want to go out in the backyard and hang myself. I feel so guilty because I spanked her butt. How do you feel after you've released a Hellfire missile that kills 65 children, burns them alive? How do you do that? And then there's 20 that survive who will be forever disfigured, arms burned off, heads on fire, eyes just empty sockets. How do you do that? I just wonder, how in the goddamn hell do you do that? How? How do you pull that trigger, push that button? How do you do that? And how do you handle it the next day when you find out what your missile did? I've never been able to understand that. Do you? Anybody out there? Do you understand how you do that? And I don't want to hear military rhetoric about, well, Mr. Malloy, you know, we protect and defend the Constitution of the United States, and order's an order. And, don't give me that, because that immediately identifies you to me as being a jerk. Just a complete jerk. And I don't want to, I don't care what you have to say, although you may cause my death. You know, I don't want to hear what you've got to say. How do you do that? How does that happen? This is one of those mysteries to me. Maybe the way you do it is with the price of admission. And the price of admission is your own mind. So that after you've done it, then you suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, whether you've been in an actual combat zone or not. But still, the full impact eventually has to creep inside your mind. I don't care how macho you think you are at 19 or 20 or 24. Hell, I was macho at 19 or 20 or 24. I could kick the world's ass and make it beg for mercy. But how do you wipe out 50 children and not go insane? Well, I guess the quick answer is you do go insane, only you just go slowly and you expect the VA to provide you with all sorts of good medications when you are finally have served your contract and released from duty. But I just wonder if the knowledge of burned alive children and, to what degree. I know how it affected Timothy McVeigh. We'll be back after the break. Well, the break's coming. Boom, beep, boom, beep, boom, beep, boom. There's the break. We'll be right back.
So at night I sit in my watch. Come from these burning up these days. Evolution says time is running out. I've been here too long.
10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew, Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg. My name is Mike Malloy. And again, we will have for you on Monday night an encore presentation, is what we laughingly call it, of Malloy program. Probably something from this week on the theory that most people would be doing fun things and not listening to the radio on Monday evening. I know we damn sure we're not going to be listening to the radio. I don't know. Well, we might be, come to think of it, at 9 o'clock at night. We just might be. But anyway, we'll be back live Tuesday. So forewarned is forearmed or something, you know. Karen is calling from Olympia, Washington. Hey, Karen.
Oh, my gosh, I got on.
Yes, Mike. You did.
Mike, I love you. I love you and Kathy.
Well, that's
very sweet. First of all, let me tell you that my husband and I are in our 60s, and our kids keep saying, let it go, let it go. Oh, I can't let it go.
Yeah.
It's your future. It's your future. Pay attention.
Yeah.
Don't let it go. Do you get me? So,
sure.
I know your kids, Molly, and you say, I need to let it go. No, it's their future. Sweetheart.
Yeah, that's very true.
And in Afghanistan, why are we in Afghanistan?
Yeah, why?
My best friend was a Peace Corps worker in Afghanistan. She told me, and on 911, she called me and said, what are we going to do to those people? They're so kind, peaceful, and beautiful. And what are we doing? What?
Well, that argument, Karen, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. That argument about what are we doing, or that point of view about what are we doing, can be made for just about every military engagement that, to which we have sent our young men and now young women over the past, 50 years, right? More than that, since 1950. So it would be, 60, oh, hell, I don't know. Irish Dave writes, regarding why we can't tell the difference when we're getting ready to unleash death, Irish Dave, who's a vet, writes, Mike, during the Southeast Asian war games, that's irony, a skilled MPQ-4, that's Ground Control Approach Radar, could tell if it was a woman or a man walking through a rice paddy. Didn't really matter, though, since they were all VC, or not. A lot of those Predator strikes are directed out of Nellis Air Force Base in Las Vegas. I understand most of those strikes are computer-ordered. Did I read that in the paper? Nah, too busy with the other video games. No, read the paper. The people, I think what he's saying is the people who hit the button. They're reading the paper? Nah, too busy with the other video games. Detachment, which is seldom connected, kind of like baby killing from high altitude. Ask Coot McCain. Yeah, he would know, wouldn't he? Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm all right. How about you?
Oh, I'm annoyed.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm always annoyed. I'm always PO'd about something, but...
Yeah.
You know, we're discussing... I mean, which administration are we in now?
Yeah, beginning to wonder just a tad. This guy is more articulate and more intelligent and can really speechify, but good God.
I mean, we're trying to make up infer past mistakes by repeating the same behavior.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
It doesn't work.
I mean, it makes no sense to me, Mike. It makes no sense to me. And that speech he gave this week, because you know what? I don't even count Cheney, because Cheney, he's not a player anymore that we know of.
I wonder about that. I wonder, you know, Cheney and Bush made sure that, I'm sure it was Cheney, made sure that embedded in the military high command and the CIA and the DIA and all these spook agencies were people who were really political appointees, but they were switched over to civil service jobs to make sure that they're in there forever. I just wonder how much of our security apparatus, such as it is, has not been put there by Cheney to further just screw everything up. You know what I'm saying?
No, I get what you're saying, but none of them is the president of the United States.
Well, that's true, too.
None of them is the president of the United States. And that speech annoyed me. His speech annoyed me. What did he call it? Was it misguided experiments? In other euphemistic language, it was torture.
Yeah, I know.
It was torture. It was criminal behavior.
I know.
And then he says, we have to turn the page on him. Like, this isn't your kid, you know, getting into a fender bender after having a couple of Zimas.
Yeah, that's true. It's not that at all, is it?
I mean, it's torture and it needs to be dealt with. And the same thing with Afghanistan and Iraq. You're repeating this. That's the definition of insanity.
Yeah, it is. It is a workable definition. Yeah.
And it's just driving me crazy. Like, what did we vote for? I mean, that's why I'm angry, and that's why I'm annoyed. Like, what are we going to do about it?
Well, I don't know. I don't know any longer, Paula, what we can do about it unless we can motivate 5 million people to turn out in the streets of the U.S. Hey, there's the movie, the music. I got to go. You have a good holiday.
Have a great weekend, Mike.
Okay, you too, Paula. Thanks for checking in. I'll see you Tuesday, Truth Seekers. So take care. Have a safe holiday, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. I'm going straight to hell. Won't you come and hang along with me alone? Have a great weekend, Kevin, wherever you are. Just like my